Now, as we've run through the book of Amos, we've seen a lot about justice. We've seen a lot about love, mercy. And we've also seen about what it means to call yourself a believer in a slightly dodgy world, or a very dodgy world, maybe. And so I'm going to put up a few questions here for us to ponder on as we look at Amos chapter 7. First one is, what do you think the average person thinks about Christians? How do you think the way you show Jesus in your life has helped or hindered others from seeing Jesus? When you see people rebelling or even deliberately going against God, how do you feel? What do you wish for them? And the last one, how do you react when people try and stop you from living out or talking about your faith? So if you get bored at any point whilst I'm rambling on, just have a look at those questions. See, God called Israel to be light in a dark, destructive world where people tried to live without God. And that is exactly the same job that he's given us, the church, because we're just grafted into the olive branches, as the Bible puts it. We've been joined with Israel. God's not done with Israel yet. The church is joined with Israel, and the church's job is to do the same thing. So how are we doing? What do you reckon? Well, the jury's out, isn't it? Actually, no, in this one there is no jury, is there? God doesn't need a jury. He doesn't need our advice. But unlike the passages that we've looked at so far, in the book of Amos, we've found that in chapter 7, there is a focus on Amos himself, more than on his message. Now, of course, there's a message here, but there's a lot about Amos to be picked up. And as we've been looking at his message and looking more of his message and seeing that he's pretty consistent in what he's saying, I think we're going to find that as we see Amos in action in chapter 7, there will be quite a lot of help for us in answering the questions that we've got up on the screen. We'll see in this chapter that Amos has two meetings. First, he has a conversation with God, and then he has a chat with a religious bloke called Amaziah. And, well, both of these chats show us, I think, a couple of different aspects of Amos's character. So let's look at what goes on first, then, in that first chat between God and Amos. That's in Amos 7, verses 1 to 9. The Sovereign Lord showed me a vision. I saw him preparing to send a vast swarm of locusts over the land. This was after the king's share had been harvested from the fields, and as the main crop was coming up. In my vision, the locust ate every green plant in sight. Then I said, O Sovereign Lord, please forgive us, or we will not survive, for Israel is so small. So the Lord relented from this plan. I will not do it, he said. Then the Sovereign Lord showed me another vision. I saw him preparing to punish his people with great fire. The fire had burned up the depths of the sea and was devouring the entire land. Then I said, O Sovereign Lord, please stop, or we will not survive, for Israel is so small. Then the Lord relented from this plan too. I will not do that either, says the Sovereign Lord. Then he showed me another vision. I saw the Lord standing beside a wall that had been built using a plumb line. He was using a plumb line to see if it was still straight. And the Lord said to me, Amos, what do you see? I answered, a plumb line. And the Lord replied, I will test my people with this plumb line. I will no longer ignore all their sins. The pagan shrines of your ancestors will be ruined and the temples of Israel will be destroyed. I will bring the dynasty of King Jeroboam to a sudden end. As we've seen over the past weeks, Amos, the fig farming shepherd from southern Judah, has been singled out by God to go and tell Israel a few home truths from the Book of Truth. And over, Amos has been hitting them hard with the fact that they are emotionally, spiritually, and morally screwed up. They are messed up people. And he said time after time, wake up people, because God is on your case and he has no intention of letting you carry on just as you are. So turn back to God before it's too late. Well, if you've been here over the last few weeks, you won't have missed that message because it's been going on and on and on. I wonder why God does that. Why does he keep saying the same thing? Maybe it's because we're not listening. I don't know. But I've got a feeling there's a method in God's plan. Wake up. The world needed to wake up then and it needs to wake up now. So for weeks then we've been hearing that God has given Amos some strong words to say. But now we see that as well as words, Amos has some striking visions. It's a bit like a book, isn't it? You know, sometimes it's nice to have a picture occasionally, isn't it? You know, for us slow readers, it's nice to have a picture. But before we wander off and have a look at these visions, it's worth just thinking about the question of what is a vision? Well, a vision isn't something dreamt up by people. It isn't some kind of crazy psychedelic dream that we all decide what it means this or it means that. No, it is something given by God. It is not something that is not there. So you're not seeing something that isn't there when you have a vision. When you have a vision, you are seeing everything that is there. God is opening up more. A vision is clear and it is compelling because it is given by God. So God gives Amos a vision. He gives him a picture of how all this is going to turn out. And he ends up with a plumb line. I was going to dig mine out of my toolbox, but I thought I'd get a shinier one because mine's a bit more rusty than that. A plumb line. But before the plumb line, God gives Amos two pictures of complete destruction. I mean, they are pictures of complete destruction when you look at it. It's just everything gone, isn't it? First, it's the locust eating every possible crop before the second harvest, showing that this destruction is going to hit everyone, rich or poor. Up to this point, Amos has been very careful to point out that the worst of the problem across Israel and Judah was caused by the wealthy and powerful. But of course, if your government tells you to do something that is wrong, it doesn't mean to say you have to do it, does it? But this lot were. He'd been saying, you're leading people the wrong way, you're doing all the wrong things, you are messing them up. But now he's saying, actually, all of you, you've got an individual choice. And it's the same today. We choose whether we follow God or whether we don't. So when Amos looks at this, his heart is broken. He cries out, God, please don't do this. How will anyone survive that kind of judgment? So God says, oh, okay, I won't do it that way. Next is fire destroying everything. And again, when Amos sees this, he's brokenhearted and he begs, please, God, not that. Don't let this happen. They will never be able to stand. And amazingly, the sovereign Lord says, okay, I'm listening to you, Amos. I'm not going to do that either. Then there's a picture of the plumb line. A picture of God checking to see which of his people are out of plumb, which of his people are crooked. And God says a sudden judgment is coming. The vision God shows is a God of detail. A God who notices absolutely everything. Now I can tell you that I've held a plumb line against walls that have looked to me be pretty straight. And I'd have found that actually they're just slightly out. Do you know what happens then? I have the wall taken down. That's what God's going to do. He wants perfection. And he won't put up with anything else. God is a God of detail. God is a God of fair measures. In this vision, there is judgment, but there is still room for those who seek God to find him. You see, throughout the Bible, God makes it clear that there will always be salvation for the remnant of people who truly look to him. You know what a remnant is? It's a scrap. It's a little bit. But God says, I'm interested in that remnant because that scrap, that little bit, they're the people who are looking for me. They're the people who are serious. So what do we learn about Amos then from this? Well, Amos has been speaking the truth to people who need to hear it. But he's no religious bigot, is he? He's not going to say, you lot are going to hell. And I love it. He's no religious bigot. He's got a heart of compassion. He wants to see them saved, and he is devastated. He is genuinely choked up with emotion. He is heartbroken because he knows the judgment that he's been preaching about is heading their way. And quickly. If you just think back to when we looked at Jonah, you'll see Amos is the polar opposite to Jonah. Jonah, what did he want? He wanted the people in Nineveh to really cop it, didn't he? Jonah wanted them to fry. He was there with his frying pan waiting. He didn't give a hoot. In fact, he wanted to sit there and watch God wipe them off the face of the earth. He got his little tent ready for the whole action. He was disgusted that God had such mercy. But look at Amos. Amos is speaking truth to people who have totally turned their back on God. These people are stiff-necked, they are arrogant, they are big-headed. They're a bunch who haven't listened to God's word over the years at all. For years and years, God's been sending prophets, he's been talking to them, he's been calling them back. And they have openly defied God. Even whilst they've continued going to their temple and continue to offer their sacrifices. But Amos is brokenhearted that this is about to happen to this people. These people who don't give a hoot. He's a man who will preach the whole gospel, but it is always from a heart of compassion. One of the questions asked was, when you see people openly defying God, even when flaunting their defiance in your heart, what do you wish for them? I mean, maybe you can't wait for them to get what they deserve. Maybe you want God to judge them. Maybe we get angry on God's behalf when people laugh at him and ridicule him. I wonder how often we want others to get what is coming to them when we should be really praying for them to respond to God's mercy and his forgiveness. There's a really important check for us here. Ask yourself this, am I a Jonah or am I an Amos? Christians should have a heart of compassion to match Amos. Amos hated the way that these people treated God, but he prayed for them, and he showed his love for them, and he shared the truth with them, and he cared for them, and he stood in the gap for them. And in the end, he accepted God's love and justice for them. Ultimately, God said, Amos, the plumb line's been set. Judgment is coming. Amos had the same heart that God had on this. He wasn't glad of what was going to happen. He was brokenhearted about the destruction and the judgment that sin brings. We should be brokenhearted about that same thing. There's no point in shouting and moaning about how sinful and awful everything is. There's a point in that, as long as there is a point of us pointing that out because we're compassionate. In the next section, we're going to find that Amos, though, has a very different conversation. Turn with me to verse 10. Then Amaziah, the priest of Bethel, sent a message to Jeroboam, king of Israel. Amos is hatching a plot against you right here on your very doorstep. What he is saying is intolerable. He's saying Jeroboam will soon be killed and the people of Israel will be sent away into exile. Then Amaziah sent orders to Amos. Get out of here, you prophet. Go back to the land of Judah and earn your living by prophesying there. Don't bother us with your prophecies here in Bethel. This is the king's sanctuary and the national place of worship. But Amos replied, I'm not a professional prophet. I was never trained to be one. I'm just a shepherd and I take care of sycamore fig trees. But the Lord called me away from my flock and told me, go and prophesy to my people in Israel. Now then, listen to this message from the Lord. You say, don't prophesy against Israel. Stop preaching against my people. But this is what the Lord says. Your wife will become a prostitute in this city, and your sons and daughters will be killed. Your land will be divided up, and you yourself will die in a foreign land. And the people of Israel will certainly become captives in exile, far from their homeland. Well, it seems to me that it is amazing that Amos didn't end up in this kind of punch-up before now, isn't it? I mean, the things he's been preaching, the things he's been saying to these people, well, they're obviously not very keen on his message. But here we finally see the point where Amaziah, one of the local church ministers, as it were, starts to try and flex his muscles. First, he writes to the king and lies about Amos plotting to overthrow him. Then he tackles Amos head on. And basically he says, get lost. We don't want you here. We don't want your type here. You're religious nutters, you are. What are you doing here? Me and my mates, we're very happy, thank you very much, doing our church thing. And we don't want you coming along and involving God in all of this stuff. I mean, what are you doing? Shut up, go home. Now, we need to remember this Amaziah, he was a career pastor. He was a career priest. God hadn't called Amaziah to do what he did. For him, it was a job. It was an important position. People looked up to Amaziah. And he had to do a really, really easy thing. All he had to do was to have people going through the motions and encourage people to do their religion and to take the king's money and to live in a nice, comfortable house and having a nice, comfortable life. So you can imagine that when a bloke turns up speaking God's words with God's authority, in God's strength, Amaziah freaks out. He gets angry. He can see his job going up in smoke. He can see his job is seriously on the line. So he defends his position by telling the real man of God to shut up and go home. So what does Amos do? He says, I'm not a prophet. I'm not even the son of a prophet. I've just got my fig growing sheep breeding business and I'm just an average bloke pretty much. But God has sent me to say this. And so what I'm saying here is the truth that God gives me. You see, authority doesn't come from our position. That's the way the world looks at it, isn't it? They want to ask about what God's doing. They might ask the Archbishop of Canterbury or the Pope. They might know. Better to ask God. Authority comes from the calling of God and the message of God. Amos knows that he's got a job to do, you see, because firsthand he's found out. When God gives you a job to do, he always gives you the strength and the courage to get on and do it. So Amos says, and as he says this, he's no doubt throwing a few of those kind of arrow prayers. You ever throw up any arrow prayers when you're in a sticky situation? Lord, help me with this. I've got a feeling that Amos is doing a bit of this, trying to avoid the punches. He speaks the truth into a really dangerous situation. Now, I know that we are often in situations that are difficult, aren't we? If you're in the situation that you're in, then just ask the Lord to help you through it. He won't take you away from it necessarily, but he'll help you through it. See, the thing is with Amos here, Amaziah could have had Amos killed without too much bother. It would have been easy. He wouldn't have had any problem. And Amos knows that. And Amos could equally go back home to his farm and his family, which was probably quite a lot more comfortable than doing what he's doing. But God has called Amos and ordered him to speak the truth. And so Amos says that is what he's going to do. then he goes on and says some pretty harsh and shocking things to Amaziah, doesn't he? Basically, he says, "You're the priest. You ought to know better than to shake your fist at the living God. But instead of warning the people about their sin, you've piled in with them. You've encouraged them. You've shown them the ways to ignore God. So this is what is going to happen to you and your family. Your wife is going to end up as a prostitute. You'll get your children killed and you'll be carted off to another country and die there. You may claim to be a priest and you may think that everything is looking really good for you at the moment. But God's judgment is heading your way, Amaziah." Now, we don't hear Amaziah's response, but I can imagine it. That takes some courage, doesn't it? That takes an incredible boldness and a certainty. And I'm not saying that Amos was certain in his own ability. I'm saying instead that Amos knew in his heart that if he had this message to say, then if it was Amos speaking, he'd be dead meat. But if it's God speaking, then he'd have the boldness and it'd be a different matter altogether. So wasn't Amos just a little bit anxious? Yeah, I'm pretty sure he was. Because you see, courage isn't the absence of fear. It's what people often think, isn't it? But courage isn't not being fearful. No, courage is the willingness to trust God to do the right thing and to live out your calling. Amos looks at the threat of a bloody nose or worse, and he sticks to the message and the calling that God has given him. Trusting God, whatever might happen. I wonder, do you do that? Do you? Well, we must. Courage is looking into fear, into the personal risks, into the difficulty, and stepping out in faith and saying, "I'm God's, and he's got me in his hand. He's called me to speak the truth. He's called me to be in this situation that I'm in." Amos does what Jesus calls all believers to do, to stand up for him when it costs and when it doesn't. Matthew 5, 10 and 11 says this: "Blessed are those of you who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven. For in the same way they persecuted the prophets who went before you." So that's it. Let's just quickly revisit those questions that I put up on the screen. What do you think the average person thinks of Christians? Well, I wonder, was Amos too fussed about this? I don't think so. Now, don't get me wrong. I don't mean he wasn't concerned what people thought of him, because I'm sure he was. But I do think that Amos didn't let people's thoughts about Amos stop him from getting on and sharing the message that God had him share. Next question. How do you think the way you show Jesus in your life has helped or hindered others from seeing Jesus? Well, Amos was no doubt a curious sight to the posh people he was talking to. He was a bit of a country bumpkin. He got no formal training. He probably got a funny old accent. But his words, the things he said, will have hit them powerfully because they're God's words. Amos was more interested in showing people the way to God. And so, of himself, I'm pretty sure that Amos wouldn't have hindered anyone. What will have hindered them were the attitudes of the people as they heard what Amos said. That could easily have hindered them. It certainly did when it came to Amaziah, didn't it? And we should expect that to be the way. It always has been the case. Sadly, that's the way it always is. In 1 Corinthians 1 verse 18, Paul put it like this: "The message of the cross is foolish to those who are heading for destruction. But we who are being saved know it is the very power of God." And he should know, because the New Testament is full of accounts of Paul preaching to many, many people. And you think, well, that's great, isn't it? Well, yeah, it is. But so often only a few people would take his message to heart. Now don't take that as some kind of reason not to tell people. People's attitudes are their problem. Other people's behaviour is their problem. Saving people is God's work through his Spirit. All we are to do is to keep on keeping on as we share the good news of Jesus. You and I are not responsible for what people do with what they hear. But we are responsible for them hearing it. Next question. When you see people rebelling and even deliberately going against God, how do you feel? What do you wish for them? Amos was courageous and he boldly told people what they needed to hear as God sent him. But he didn't go with a cold, hard heart, did he? We've seen that. His heart and his prayers were full of compassion. He desperately cared for the people he was warning. In fact, I'd say that his courage came out of his compassion. Because he cared that much, he had the boldness to tell people, to warn them. We should be carrying a burden for the people who we know don't know the truth of the gospel. We should be grieving for people. That's a strong word, but we should be doing that. We should grieve them and we should do something about it, both in our prayers and our words and our actions. How do you react, last question, when people try and stop you living out or talking about your faith? Well, Amos knew, and every preacher, prophet or believer since Amos has known, that there is no real choice. People might stop listening, but loving Christians can't stop telling that best good news that there has ever been. So let's learn from Amos. When we are living for Christ, we must do so with his courage and with his compassion. Let's stand and worship.